You're listening to the Hey Kids Comics Radio Show, broadcast through the facilities of Trent Radio on 92.7 CFFF-FM in Peterborough, Canada.
Hey kids!
I'm Batman.
Look, up in the sky! It's a bird!
It's a plane!
It's dance-off, bro! Me and you!
Hello and welcome to Hey Kids Comics. I'm your host, Dan Collins.
Hey there, this is Martin Bruda.
Chris Gill.
Hi, I'm Sam Tweedle. I could talk about Archie forever.
The biggest bane to my existence right now is Shield number 9.
They know that I would have put it under my shirt and ran off.
What are you talking about? I haven't seen any Action Comics number 1.
Gwenpool, I mean Spider-Gwen, the whole heat and stuff, this is going to be worth a few bucks. And nobody wanted it.
Yes, Dan, the Killing Joke does need to be R-rated.
I kind of like punching the walls of reality as a way to bring a character back because nobody knows what we're talking about right now.
Dark Knight Strikes Back was one of the biggest piles of dung ever, and it was what, $10 an issue?
We need to shame Sam. He is not here because he's gone to the Gem and the Holograms movie.
Hello and welcome to Hey Kids Comics. I'm Dan Collins.
Martin Bruda.
Chris Gilpin.
I'm just far, far, far too comfortable here on a Friday. My chair sank down. It fell back. I'm like semi-reclined. My gut's out. My microphone's close. I'm good. I can just like lounge here.
And the rest of us can't see you because you're all in camo.
Okay. Yeah, I was in the washroom just before we got on air. And I was, you know, washing my hands as you're diligently supposed to after manhandling your junk. And I'm looking there and I'm like, geez Louise, I got woodland camo shorts. I'm wearing a BFM shirt where Bill's wearing an army helmet. And I got my Legion ball cap on, which is a digital Arctic camouflage. I'm like out of Duck Dynasty here, boys.
There you go. Nice.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I'm ready to talk about comics, eh?
Yep.
It was kind of funny. There's no good war comics anymore. What was the last good army comic that came out? Is it
this feels like this could be a whole discussion about war comics and the political climate that produces war comics, also justified wars, people believing in a war.
It was a big genre back in the day, right?
It sure was, like after, Sergeant Fury and
Sergeant Rock and
The Losers, Haunted Tank,
Our Fighting Forces.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, did I love the Haunted Tank? I have a huge affinity for the old DC dollar comics, and GI Combat was one of the dollar comics all the time. And I had a ton of those. I don't know why. Must have been a good value at the time, but I used to pick up all the dollar comics that they came out, big, fat, thick ones. And I remember reading a ton of G.I. Combat and the Haunted Tank. That was a fun book. I think it was it Warren Ellis who did War Stories?
I don't know.
I'm trying to remember.
I know Joe Kubert did a lot of art on those.
Well, yeah, like the older ones, yeah. Joe Kubert did a ton of Sergeant Rock. But I mean, recently, if I'm not mistaken, I think... I don't know. Was it Warren Ellis? Now I got a Google search. But it was, I don't know. Diamond? No. Wasn't Dynamite. I think it was Image. Maybe Dark Horse? Oh, man.
I don't know.
Now I got to Google it.
I don't know.
But it was a good comic.
Yep.
As we search frantically here and try to figure out. And, of course, The Nom. You read The Nom.
Yeah.
That was a little bit before your time, Dan. But
yeah.
That was good. That wasn't was that Larry Hama? No.
No. I don't think
Who
so.
Who wrote The Nom? My gosh, we are firing on all cylinders here on this Friday. We are just rocking the Casbah.
Did this all just come out because you're wearing camo?
It all just came out because of camo. Yeah. It all came out because of the camo thing and everything that we're thinking about talking about just fleshed out the ear, and I'm just like, army, boom, 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 kapow. Oh man.
Actually, I think Larry Hama did write it.
Well, he did a lot of G.I. Joe, right?
Yeah.
And I think he wrote The Nom. Was it Michael Golden? Oh my gosh, our brains are just not working here today.
No.
War stories. comic book. Google search. As we continue to think about it. Garth Ennis. Preacher, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Garth Ennis War Stories. Oh, I think I read the first two trade paperbacks, but I didn't read the rest. But that was a good good war comic. I still have that. Remember I brought in that hardcover that I bought at Chapters on discount? It had a whole bunch of old, what was his name? He used to draw for Mad Magazine. Severn.
You're asking all the hard questions was his, tonight.
Anyways, John Severn. I haven't finished reading that yet either. My gosh, my to-read pile is massive.
I'm cutting through mine pretty good.
I'm doing really good on catching up on my back issues.
Yeah.
But my trade paperback pile is just massive.
Yeah.
It's huge. It's ginormous.
Well, just don't go to a Dollarama then.
Yeah, I kind of looked at that, and I didn't really see anything there that jumped out at me. I would have preferred that Namor. So, anybody who doesn't know, head to your local Dollarama. They've got, for a little while there, they had a hardcover Star Trek collection. Mm-hmm. From Eagle Moss that had a whole bunch of reprints of old Star Trek comics. $4 a copy, and if you go on Amazon, it's $30 a copy for these books.
Yeah.
Now, they didn't have them all. I think there's more than 55 volumes.
Oh, really?
In the publishing, but I got, I don't know, 8 issues for $3 a piece. That seems pretty good.
Yeah.
And now people are finding other Marvel trade paperbacks. I think we saw Namor in one photo. I really wanted that one.
S.H.I.E.L.D.
But here in Peterborough, we got S.H.I.E.L.D., Secret Avengers, and something else.
Andrew said there was a Spider-Man, but I didn't see it in the picture.
Yeah. Oh, I'll probably swing by tomorrow and take a peek if there is.
Yeah.
Excuse me. But, yeah, I've seen tons and tons and tons. Other than that, I actually did read a comic book this week. I don't know about you guys.
I read a few.
I read Berserker Unbound from Dark Horse.
Oh, yeah?
And it's like Jeff Lemire did the writing. A good Canadian lad there, eh?
Yep.
And Mike Donandado, Jr.
Don't ask me how to pronounce it. I'm not sure.
And basically, so I'm reading this comic, and I'm like, oh, okay. So this is what you do with a script when you lose the Conan license.
Ah.
Because Conan was at Dark Horse, now Conan's back at Marvel. Right. And I'm just like, this is Conan. This is just Conan. It's a Conan book. You know, it updated ever so slightly, and his hair's a different color, but he's still, you know, berserker rage beast, and he likes to kill things, and his wife and child were murdered in a village, and now he's angry, and he's running around. And then at the end of the story, he walks into this cavern, and it does this kind of runish thing, and he ends up in Central Park in New York. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, didn't we just read this as a Red Sonja book? Wasn't that the exact same plot of that one Red Sonja series from Dynamite, where she ends up in her little chainmail in Central Park in the winter? How could you not read that? Those had Adam Bishop covers.
Yeah.
Kapow! Kabam! Kapow! Kaboom! But it was a good book. I'm not going to jump out and get the rest of the issues, but it was a decent book.
Mm-hmm.
It was well done. But I really feel like because of the way it was just sort of all this setup of the character. And then in the last few pages, it's like, okay, now we're going to change the world that he's in. So it's like, oh, okay, so issue 2 is actually going to be the kickoff of the story. Which, whatever.
Yeah.
What else? What did you read?
Well, I've been meaning to ask you about Deceased. Did you keep reading that?
I read 1 and 2, I think, but I didn't.
3 and 4.
I didn't get 3 or 4.
Okay. I just found, we both agreed on 1 was pretty bad, I think.
Yeah, it was not great, right? And I just flipped through 2 in the store, and I was like, no, this is, done.
It got better.
Yeah?
I found it got better.
So what happened? What happened? What happened?
2, 3, and 4. Well, spoilers. They're still fighting the anti-life equation or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
But anybody that looks at a computer screen, phone screen, turns into these zombies, quote unquote zombies. But
are we allowed to say bull caca on the radio?
Yeah,
that's bullshit.
Yeah.
That's some kind of sociological. Oh, you watch it. You're in your screens too much.
But they already did that. In Final Crisis, they literally did that.
Yeah.
They had people, like the anti-life equation was passed through the internet in Final Crisis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's not even original.
And Stephen King wrote a book called Cell, which anybody who was on their cell phone at a certain point in time became a zombie.
Blech.
So, but anyways, they got it did get better.
Yeah.
Like issue one was, yeah, but so, 2 and 3 and 4.
So it might be worth getting the trade paperback, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I can throw that on the pile of
for $4 at Dollarama in 7 years.
It was interesting that Hal went to check on Carol. That's his girlfriend, right?
Yeah.
Carol. And
Hal Jordan, Green Lantern?
He walked off screen and he went in to check on Carol on his cell phone. And the next thing you know, he comes out swinging at or biting at Black Canary and Green Arrow. So Canary just blasts him, like almost disintegrates him. And guess who becomes a new Green Lantern?
I don't know.
Black Canary.
No way.
Yeah.
See, that would be cool.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
So, like, what's the point of this? I've never, like, is this just an Elseworlds
thing? Yeah, it's just an Elseworldsy thing, knockoff of Marvel Zombies. You know, what happens if everybody gets infected? And they threw the anti-life equation in there from the New Gods just to make it DC-ish.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess that makes it DC-ish. So that at least it gives it a real reason for happening.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just... Like, when Dan DiDio was talking about, hey, we need to, like, come up with better stories and stuff like this, I don't think he was talking about this book.
No.
I feel like this is just, you know, marketing grab, and I don't...
Well, I keep seeing these news headlines where Damian Wayne is the new Batman. Batman passed the mantle over to him, like...
What, in DC's?
Okay, yeah.
Oh, okay.
They don't say that, but then you have to read it and go, oh, yeah, because Batman, sorry, he died and deceased.
Yeah.
And... all the Robins and Birds of Prey and stuff are all zombies, so well, most of them. So Alfred gives Damian a new suit. We haven't seen him in it yet, but
now this offers two segues. So we're gonna go down one path and then we gotta remember to track back to the other one.
All right.
The first one is the current Batman series, because I kinda caught up on that. But the one that I really wanted to get into is our good buddy Arthur Sidindim, the zombie guy, the Marvel zombie artist who traced the snot out of and photoshopped the heck out of a thing. So what was he doing? Issue 4, wasn't it? Is the Joker?
Yeah, 3 or 4.
Yeah. Anyways, so we've talked about this before. He kind of photoshopped somebody else's photography. Cosplayer's photography, and you know, now he's repainted the cover. He says no, this was the cover as it was supposed to be, but it still looks like crap. And anyways, long story short, he's a jerk. So I was following along, right? And I'm like, okay, well, I'm not going to get Deceased number 4, the zombie cover, because I don't want to support this jackal.
Yeah,
trying to see if I can say the word donkey on air. Dan's shaking his head. No, we can't say donkey on air.
Right.
Anyways, so instead, I looked at this cosplayer, and I think his name is, his trade name is Harley's Joker.
Okay.
And he's got a website, and he's got prints and stuff. So I bought a amazing print, 11 by 17. It's a photograph of him recreating, I'm trying to remember what Batman issue it is. It's the Batman issue where Joker's on the cover and he's throwing cards. And Batman's down below. They're releasing a facsimile. I think it's 451.
I know the one you're talking about.
But you know which one? It was a very famous Batman cover.
Yeah.
So it's a photograph, right? So instead of a drawing, it's a photograph and him dressed up as the Joker and all this stuff. So I bought that instead. It was A, cheaper. B, supported this cosplayer that had his work ripped off of him. And C, kind of said, you know, silently and quietly stuck it to Arthur. Screw you, Arthur. So it looks great. It's going to go on the wall somewhere. I don't know where. I have so much stuff.
Is he Canadian?
No. American. No. He's American.
So shipping.
Oh, no. It was pretty reasonable. It was really good. It was definitely less than that special cover would have cost. Because you would have had to pay special prices on the shipping on that cover, too. Because it was, I think it was a store exclusive. Right? Yeah. So it would have cost more. But other than that.
Yeah. So Dan's your back.
Okay, shall we circle back? Or
circle
or
back?
You Dan? Oh my gosh, sorry. Killer yawn. We'll edit that one out when we turn it into a podcast. How about you, Dan? Did you read anything before we go to the Batman?
Well, I haven't read anything per se this exact week, but I have been trying to read a comic before bed every night.
Yes.
Now, I've been sidetracked because I've had some other stuff come up where I'm working on some comics, and now I'm, like, staying up too late and then going straight to bed rather than reading. So that has affected it. But, see, I had a perfect segue, too, because what I had read involves the New Gods. And it was Mr. Miracle, the Jack Kirby series, the first 18 issues.
Nice.
Picked that up on Comixology for $5 during a sale.
That's really good.
So I've been reading that. And that one, you know, it's my first real foray into Mr. Miracle. And I also picked up the new Tom King series at the same time, because it was on sale for $5 as well.
I love that Tom King series.
So I thought I'd read the original first, because I know you had said the new one is a love letter to fans up until the end.
Now, I haven't read the original Kirby, New Gods, and Mr. Miracle in decades. But I did read the after Justice League, Bwahaha Justice League, and yeah. Mr. Miracle became part of that. He had a regular series, and I collected that. And then there was a regular series after that, I collected that. So when I read the Tom King, it was just all these amazing throwbacks to old Jack Kirby and the whole dynamic of Mr. Miracle being High Father's son and being raised by Apocalypse. Not Apocalypse. Help me out.
Darkseid.
How can I forget that? Darkseid, or Darkseid, as this little Polak used to pronounce it back in the day. And it was just a really good comic. It was just freaking awesome. Loved
the,
it.
The Jack Kirby ones, really, like, I was reading it, and it really feels like just like a escape of the week.
Yeah.
So like every issue there's got to be some sort of like impossible escape that Mr. Miracle escapes from, and every time though he's just like, well, thanks to Mother Box I was able to escape. And you're like, man, like if this was a detective series it would literally just be like, well, thanks to that little bird that told me the secret identity of the killer. Like, that's every week. It's just,
yeah,
you know, he Mother Box helped me escape. Like, how about just having him actually be a good escape artist, not just using Mother Box?
Well, that was the comics back then, though, right? It was like you got your 32 pages and you told the complete story and it was over and done with. So, yeah, there was a lot of formula.
Yeah, but, like, how about a satisfying end to the thing? Like, It's kind of like when Stephen Moffat's writing Doctor Who and he kills the Doctor off in the first episode of the season. And you're like, well, what's he going to do? And then at the end of the season, he's like, there was two of them. Yeah. So like they just make something up. Like, anybody can literally write a story that has a good hook at the beginning if the payoff doesn't amount to anything, because you just have it as a throwaway, like, you know, yeah. Oh, yeah, technology. Wink, wink, you know.
Yeah, there is a reason why we're not celebrating the 750th issue of the original Mr. Miracle series.
Yeah.
You know, it did kind of come and fizzle. They rebooted it.
It is the greatest disappearing act.
Yeah. They did reboot it during the DC implosion. So they continued the numbering. So if you go past the Kirby issues, all of a sudden, those were in whenever they were early 70s. And then the late 70s, there's a few. And I want to say Marshall Rogers was involved, but I can't remember off the top of my head.
Now, for the Mr. Miracle later, is that Norman Shiloh or Scott Free?
No, it's Scott Free.
Because Norman Shiloh, I know the only thing that I've actually read of Mr. Miracle is that there's a Norman Shiloh appearance in Final Crisis.
Yeah.
So I don't know anything about like what happened between them.
Yeah, well, that was just like Dr. Fate kind of got rebooted to a new guy in the 90s. Mr. Miracle got rebooted to a new guy. Who else did they do that to?
Norman Shiloh is in the original series.
He's in the original series, though. It's kind of like, what's his name? John Stewart becoming Green Lantern?
Yeah.
Like, he was introduced way back in the 60s. In Neil Adams' run on Green Lantern, Green Arrow. And it wasn't until later on that he becomes a Green Lantern. So it was kind of nice that Shiloh gets pulled back as a recurring character.
I do have a complaint about King Kirby.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, his...
The Kirby crackle.
His drawing of Norman Shiloh is horrible. And also, like, Big Barda, Kirby can't draw women from what I've seen.
No.
And also, yeah, like... like Norman Shiloh looks like a feral creature and not like a human being in this most of this comic book. So, and Barda is just completely disproportionate and not in an Adam Bishop kind of way.
No. Yeah, like Jack.
Her face is too big and her shoulders are too wide and like just kind of, I guess she's probably supposed to be like a big lumbering woman who's like 17. Imposing and stuff, but like it just, and she's also in a bikini a lot, which is weird. Yeah. So
as a kid, I was never a big Jack Kirby fan. I appreciate his artwork now as far as it's, you know, the talent, the dynamicness of his poses and all that stuff, but it's not a style that I really gravitated to as a kid. Him and Carmine Infantino, those are my two. As kids, I was like, what are you guys doing? Why are these people publishing books for all these decades? Like, Kurt Swan, get somebody else in here.
I was waiting for Kurt Swan to come up.
You knew it was coming, Kurt Swan.
Can't have a overrated artist rant without Kurt Swan getting brought in there.
No. So are you going to spill the beans a little bit on the comics you're working on, or are you like NDA'd all to hell and you can't say things?
I won't spill the beans except to say it's maybe something that I might have already contributed part of to a previous comic released on Free Comic Book Day.
No, there you go.
So
there you go.
So we'll see.
So he's not going to draw the lines, but I will. Anyways. Yeah, we just, it's kind of surprising because this week me and Jeff Burton put The Adventures of Aurora Man issue 6 to bed. It's ready. It's getting printed. I won't say too much more than that because that's Jeff's baby too.
Jeff and I, talk about. Jeff sent me the picture of the cover like 20 minutes ago, right at the beginning of the show.
Yeah.
And he and I were talking a bit about the future of Little Aurora Man.
Yeah.
And so... Right now, Jeff is taking over the reins on Little Aurora Man, and he's got some cool stuff planned. So I'm excited to read what's coming out.
Cool.
So
that should be fun. Okay, what else?
Well, I thought you were going to talk about Batman.
Well, I'll talk about Batman, but I got to clear my throat first so you guys figure something out. I need a second to get the phlegm. Old man phlegm. So Batman. I'm reading Batman.
Yeah.
What a waste of a book. What a waste of a series since the wedding. Since the wedding, it's just been this crapshoot of nonsensical, like, apparently there's a bigger story being told there, but I'm having trouble following it. I'm not reading the issues in-depthly. I'm flipping because it just doesn't have my interest. So, I can't remember what issue it was. 75 or 74 comes out, and it's Bane is now in charge of Gotham City.
Yeah.
Okay, Bane's in charge of Gotham City. Right, gotcha. And then they kind of show that some of the bad guys are like the sheriff. I can't remember who's the sheriff. Riddler and stuff like this. Whatever. Then the next issue comes out, and all of a sudden, there is... What's her name? The Supergirl.
Gotham Girl.
Yeah, Gotham Girl. She's defending Gotham and beating the snot out of Captain Atom and not letting Captain Atom into Gotham.
Yeah, no heroes are allowed in Gotham.
Okay, well isn't Gotham Girl a hero? What is she doing there?
She's working with
Thomas Wayne.
Evil Thomas Wayne Batman.
Right? And so now I'm like confused. I'm like, wait a sec, you didn't say anything about that in the first issue.
Yeah.
When did that come about? And why is Gotham Girl beating up Captain Atom? Captain Atom can control molecules. He can just go like this, and she's a bunch of water vapor.
Apparently not.
Like, what?
Because she kicked the crap right out.
You know, he kind of goes, wiggles his nose, Samantha style, and all of a sudden all the air around her is gold, and she falls to the ground embedded in this brick of gold. Like what the? What? And then Damian's like, and what's his name? Not Todd.
Tim.
Tim Drake is sitting there going, and Damian goes, and Tim goes, and I'm like, okay, that was the issue. Great.
Now is this the first issue after Tom King? Or
No.
This is still Tom King's run.
This is still Tom King. So I guess he's got 10 issues.
You forgot
issues?
To mention Kite Man.
Well, and Kite Man's in it. I mean... How can you forget about Kite Man? I don't know what was I thinking. I forgot about Kite Man. Who the flippin' heck is Kite Man? Oh, it's just such a crap.
Like the Condiment King.
Like, there's no wonder. Like, I know, Tim King.
Tom King.
There's too many Tims, Toms, and Todds. Tom King, he wrote the Mr. Miracle, and I loved it. It was great. And I loved Batman leading up to the wedding. But it just seems to be this weird, I've lost my way kind of, you know, what a way to destroy. Like, they're basically final seasoning Game of Thrones with this book.
Yeah.
Like, it's just,
meanwhile, Batman's passed out on Catwoman's couch for some reason.
Yeah, Catwoman, that was the best part of the whole thing. Adam.
Now, here's, do you think that some of this is because his run is getting cut short and he's trying to cram things in?
I don't think so, because my understanding is that his run's getting cut short. He's going, I think it's issue 85, but he had stories planned out to issue 100. And when his last issue comes out, he's starting a new series called Batman and Catwoman, or Catwoman and Batman, or Gotham Knights, or whatever they're going to call it. But it's a Batman Catwoman centric book that just prints those 85 to 100 issues.
So literally the whole point of this is just to get him off of the Batman title.
Yeah. Like Dan DiDio stated in an interview that, you know, this is the main Batman book. This is the marquee book at DC Comics. Let's make the stories approachable, and let's make them, you know, something that people want to read on a regular basis, on a daily basis. Let's save the weird and strange and wacky, more experimental stuff for the Black Label.
But having said that, like, Grant Morrison's run on Batman was weird and strange.
Yeah, but they didn't have the Black Label back then, right? Like, they're really trying to segment DC Comics into three categories: DC Kids, DC, and DC Black Label. And DC Regular is supposed to be for the regular people reading the book, approachable, and the more, like you said, more Jack Kirby kind of entertainment, frivolousness. DC Kids is obviously for the kids. And then Black Label is supposed to be things like Dark Knight Returns, Killing Joke, like all that kind of, those types of books are supposed to be published in the DC Black Label. And that's happening. I mean, if you took a look at the last previews, there's like, what, 7 or 8 new Black Labels Batman books?
Is there?
Yeah. A bunch of Jokers and a bunch of weirdness. And what's that, the Batman The Last Laugh or whatever? That's... What's the last, the one that's out right now?
Last Night.
Yeah, The Last Night. That's a Black Label comic and stuff.
Oh, I don't know why, but...
But that's the thing.
Besides it being confusing, I don't see it being...
Well, that's the thing, is things like the Grant Morrison Green Lantern run. Somebody was saying that probably would have been a Black Label issue, like a series going forward, as opposed to what it is, like lumped in. Like, they really want to segment things and make it really easy. 3 categories, no strange imprints, no problems. Here it is.
And the Black Label stuff is all Elseworlds?
Not necessarily Elseworlds, just...
But, like, not continuity.
More adult stuff. It can be in continuity.
Because, like, I think personally having something on the Black Label that's in continuity and then the next Batman story isn't, is just going to be confusing.
Yeah.
Like, people won't know what's supposed to be in continuity.
Like, I definitely think almost everything that's going to be released on the Black Label DC Black Label is going to be miniseries type stuff. I got a 12-issue story I want to tell. I got a 5-issue story I want to tell. I got a 6-issue story. I got, you know, and just releasing on the DC Black Label for the more mature readers. I don't know. I mean, I'm buying Batman still, but I'm not sorry in November that it's switching to once a month.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all the DC books are going back to once a month in November. So all of a sudden, instead of buying 2 issues of Flash and 2 issues of Batman and 2 issues of Justice League, and I can't remember what other book is going back to two. So all of a sudden, it's like my pull list is going from just like $137 a month to $73 a month in November, just because of that change. So I'm like, hey, I got a bit of room. I'm going to buy X-Men and the Marauders.
Right.
See how it goes.
Has Tom King been writing Batman since Rebirth?
For a while, yeah.
Like, has he been writing it for 75 issues? Because if so, that's incredible.
I think so. I'll have, like, to look back.
I can't remember if Snyder was on that book or Detective, or if that was before Rebirth. Like, I can't remember
Snyder's run was before.
But like, yeah, if he's been on Batman for that many issues, I mean, it sucks that it's kind of petering out in a weird way. But like, because that's the kind of run we don't get on comics anymore.
No, but the same thing happened with Scott Snyder's run, him and Greg Capullo. I mean, the Court of Owls was amazing, and some of the other storylines that they had were great. And then all of a sudden, towards the end, it was like kind of beginning to fall apart a little bit. And it's like, oh, now we're going to make James Gordon the Batman in a robot suit. And I'm like, okay, you guys are running out of ideas here.
Maybe that's why nobody stays on for 75 issues.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll see how that goes. But yeah, I'm fully caught up on Batman now, and I'm just like, ugh. It's one of those books where I'm just waiting for the next creative team. Mm-hmm. You know, just waiting for the next creative team.
Have you been reading Detective?
No.
No?
No. No, that's when New 52 went, not New 52, when Rebirth went twice a month. Instead of getting Batman and Detective, Superman and Action, I just got Batman 2 issues a month and Superman 2 issues a month. So I didn't get Action, didn't get Detective.
Yeah.
So well, I don't know.
What do you think about Superman?
Superman's still pretty good. It's like my biggest problem was I was so enraptured with the Rebirth Superman series. It was freaking fantastic. It's the first time, like, I'm a huge DC guy. Never really a big Superman fan. You know, got the stray Superman books here or there. Usually it was World's Finest I'd get. I didn't get the original Superman books. Then they came out with that stupid triangle system where mm-hmm. you had to read Superman, Man of Steel, Adventures of Superman, and Action Comics in order to get the story. So all of a sudden you're reading 4 issues a month, right? Yeah. And in weird order and stuff like this. And it's just dumb. And I didn't do that. I did like John Byrne's Superman for a couple of years when he relaunched after Crisis. I read that. But when Rebirth Superman came out, I was like, this is Superman. This is the guy. This is, blue and red and white and patriotic and Boy Scout and everything noble that you see about Superman. It was just personified in that run. I'm trying to remember who wrote that. Tomasi? I think there was because it was twice a month, I think there was 2 writers. But it was fantastic. Yeah. So when our good buddy, Brian Bendis, who we're not a fan of at Marvel, comes over to DC and literally takes the book away from these guys who were doing a great job, I got a little bit bitter because the same thing happened. Captain America got, Mark Waid and Ron Garvey, and they were doing a freaking bang-up job of doing the book, but a contract had already been signed to give Captain America to Rob Liefeld. So that they were just doing this amazing run and everybody was popular, but it was too late. The book was canceled, given to Rob Liefeld. He rebooted it with a new number one for 12 issues. And then it was like, it just soured me. Mm-hmm. So the same thing with the Bendis, right? So I'm reading the Bendis Superman. I'm like, I'm not going to like this because I don't like Bendis. It's not the original thing. I don't like this. But, it's not bad. Hold on.
He seems to be stretching it out, though.
Yeah, this is all right. This isn't too bad. It's not a bad story, so I'm actually liking it.
Now,
but yeah, it is a bit slower paced.
When you say stretching it out, though, like, because Bendis is notorious for just cramming so much exposition into it, so do characters actually just have normal conversations that aren't entire panels full of words?
No, there's a lot of text sometimes.
Well, yeah, there's definitely a lot of text, but like the last issue I felt was just not needed because it was another flashback to the destruction of Krypton and the dad trying to warn everybody that the planet's going to blow up, and it was just like, why are we doing this all over
again? Was he just trying to make a political statement about our current climate change issues?
Maybe. No, I think the point of it was to lead into the fact that this creature, I can't remember what his name is, was the one that actually destroyed Krypton and not...
Rolgar.
Yeah.
Golgaroth or Golgado or whatever his name is.
It seemed to be the only point of the issue was to set the fact that everybody knew this guy existed. And that was the whole point of the issue. And I was like...
Well, the other thing that's happening is, comics are 20 pages now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they used to be 32 pages. They used to be 24 pages. And you don't think that those 4 pages are important, but they are, like... you breeze through a comic book and it's like, what happened? What the heck happened? Yeah. You know, and so it is dragging out a little bit, but it's still a good book. It's got my attention more than Batman does. So, yeah, I don't mind it.
What about House of X?
House of X, I just read issue one. I have not been able to find a copy of issue two. I didn't pre-order it, and our local comic shop here does not have extras. Yeah. But I liked issue one enough, even though I know it's going to be a totally different reboot when the books come out in October.
Yeah.
Like, I know that there's something going on here that's just kind of going to be a little mini-series.
Issue two is key, I guess. Key to the whole thing. Yeah, it is basically key to the whole thing.
But I like Hickman's issue one anyway, so when he starts writing X-Men, I think I'm going to buy into it, see what's going on.
Yeah, I'm just curious to see where they're going, because like four or five characters, big characters, died at the end of Uncanny, yet they're in the pictures of the new books that are coming out.
Yeah, so something's going on.
Like Wolfsbane. There was a whole issue about her dying, and she's right there on the New Mutants cover, so...
Yeah. Something's going on.
I don't know.
Sunday. I think I'm in Oshawa on Sunday, so I'll hit some of the shops and see if I'm positive Gnu's going to have a copy of two on the rack. Yeah.
Love of them.
So, I'll probably pick that up.
I can't see it selling out, but...
No.
Selling good, but not selling out.
No, especially with all the variant covers. You know, GNU, they always buy tons and tons so they can get the variants. So I'm sure I can get a copy.
Yeah.
Other than that, what else have we got that's strange, unusual, exciting besides The Boys on Netflix?
Not strange, unusual, and exciting, but we love to talk about omnibuses a lot.
Oh, my gosh.
And so, but this, because a lot of our talk is about cancellation of omnibus listings because nobody's pre-ordering them. So there's a Jonah Hex Bronze Age omnibus where they put in a story that was never published before.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of a cool thing to get people to buy in.
They were going to do that with the Joker omnibus too, like the 1970s series.
Yeah.
It got canceled because of the DC implosion as well. And there was a story, like another issue, ready in some form. And they were going to include that. But not enough people bought into it and it got canceled. So it'd be interesting to, like, I'd want to read this. I don't know if I want to read it in a, how many pages?
896 pages.
How on earth do you hold 896 pages in your book? Like, geez, is that your 20-minute workout, sitting there reading your comic?
And the omnibuses are the big, thick, hard covers, too.
Right? Yeah, they're huge, and they're deadly, and they're not physically bigger than a comic, right?
I think a lot of
them. They're not like the absolute editions.
Not the absolute ones, because those ones are bigger. But I think most of the the big omnibuses that are this this thick end up being like a couple inches bigger. Like they're bigger than your normal graphic novel, but not like humongous.
Like I just cannot see, being the kind of reader that I am. I have a bunch of hardcover books. Like I got a hardcover version of Frankenstein. I got a hardcover. Copies of the Hobbits. I got a hardcover copy of King Arthur tales by Thomas, was it Thomas D'Arley or something, whatever. They've never cracked the spine. I have paperback versions of them that are just ragged to death that I keep reading all the time, but the hardcovers I've never read. So I'm just not 100% sold that more than 50% of the omnibuses that are sold are being read. I think they're just book candy.
But I mean, if they are book candy, then that's fine. I mean, like I love a good looking bookshelf.
Yeah, I've got a couple
good looking bookshelves.
Everybody
you
does.
Know, you dust them, you take all the junk off once in a while and take a picture of your bookshelf to pretend like it's not covered in junk.
Like if you took a look at my Marvel Epic Collection bookshelf, it's all nice and neat and they're all like you know, OCD wise, they're all nice and same spine and everything like this. And I don't know. I mean, are they doing this because people aren't buying issue 3 of a hardcover volume when they're printing issues 1, 2, and 3?
Yeah, maybe. So they just like, well, throw it all together, or it's already set up for printing, so they decide to do something with it.
Yeah, like printing costs aren't that bad, and there's no way that book costs what are they asking for?
It didn't show a listing for that, but I know other similar sized ones generally run like 120
Like, there's no way the book costs $120 to publish.
Especially when you can buy it for $60
Yeah.
On sale.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So maybe they can, because it's a premium type packaging, they can ask for more and they're getting more. I don't know. But it is definitely, your point is absolutely 100% correct. Like, it is cool that they're putting in some interesting stuff that they didn't have anymore.
Because, like, at least it gives you, not that I think, like, for this Jonah Hex one specifically, you know, I don't think there's a lot of Jonah Hex fans like that have collected every appearance and every issue. So this, I feel like this is a weird one because it would be more of a casual fan maybe waiting for that to go on sale and pick it up rather than some diehard who doesn't want to break open his All-Star Western number 10. And
yeah, but the other thing happens is, like, myself, I read a few Jonah Hex books when I was a kid. I have a couple, and if I find one lying around that I don't have, I'll buy it for $2 or whatever for the issue, but I'm not actively chasing that series. But if somebody said all of a sudden, here's like a Marvel Epic Collection type book and here's the whole thing, I'd be like, well, sure, why not? So I can read it. Like, that, I'm getting, even though I own all the Luke Cages, Power Man and Iron Fist and Heroes for Hire, I'm still getting the Epic Collection ones and I'm reading that. I'm not reading the originals.
Yeah. And I agree, like, with that.
So I
pulling out your physical comics, especially if they're ones from the 70s or 60s, yeah, it's better to just buy a trade and keep those nice comics safe. For,
but then again, you know, what's the point in having them if you're not going to use them?
Because prestige.
Prestige.
And, like,
we can just lie about what's collectors. We can just lie what's in those magic boxes in our storage lockers. Well, nobody actually sees them.
Bring them all in like Chris Ellis did a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I was going to bring in a few today, but I didn't want to rub it in. But I noticed you got on the screen there, Death's Head. I read Death's Head number 1. It came out last week or the week before. A new series of Death's Head. And I don't know if anybody remembers Death's Head, but he was like a Judge Dredd type thing that came out of Marvel UK when Marvel UK was publishing original books. Mm-hmm. Dragon's Teeth, Death's Head, a couple of other ones, Captain Britain. And it sucked. It was bad. It was not good. It didn't have any of the charm of the original Marvel UK series. It just wasn't there. It was just blech. So what's this that you've got up there?
This one is, it's getting a collection.
Yeah. So that would be the Marvel UK original issues? Ones,
yes. But because apparently there is some appearances of the Seventh Doctor from Doctor Who,
yep,
in issue 8 of the original series, but that apparently isn't in there.
No, they don't have the rights to him anymore, yeah, so they probably can't put him. And that really sucks. Like, I would die. I would instantly buy a Micronauts omnibus from the 70s, ROM omnibus from the 70s. I buy them right away. Like, as soon as Marvel came out with the Epic Collection of the original Star Wars books, I bought all of them. I'm just buying every single one so far. The newspaper strips, the original, because I just want to reread that stuff. And I would totally buy into a Micronauts, but they can't because they can't get the licensing from Hasbro. You know, it's one of those things where, hey, we own some of the characters we added to it, but we can't publish the rest of it because it contains licensed characters, and that just sucks.
Yeah.
But there's got to be a way of doing it because, I mean, the Marvel is reprinting all the Conan stuff that Dark Horse did. So, I mean, licensing rights is a... we deal with this in the Mego collector world. There's so many people out there that just don't understand that a license is a blank contract that can have any clause in it. Mm-hmm. Like, you can... Oh, I thought Figures Toy Company had the license for DC characters, so Mego will never get the license to do DC characters. Well, I don't know. Did you read the licensing agreement? Mm-hmm. Maybe the licensing agreement says you get to, but we also get to do it with another company. Or, like, it wasn't an exclusive license. Or, like, you just never know the terms of it. So, obviously, whoever has the Conan, that's Robert E. Howard, right? Yeah.
Shrug shoulders.
Obviously, his estate is like, yeah, no, you know, we own Conan completely. So if we're giving Conan to Marvel, Marvel's got the rights to print the DC, the Dark Horse.
Hmm.
Right. You know, I don't know. So what else we got? Anything interesting, strange, unusual?
The Boys.
Crazy. The Boys. The Boys.
Did you watch, Dan?
No, I haven't. I don't have Amazon.
Oh.
See, there's that new look of Arthur Sydenham's Killing Joke homage. Like, he repainted the photo, and it looks like crap. It looks horrible. It looks so bad. Anyways, yes, The Boys.
Yes, did you finish it?
I know somebody who has Amazon Prime, cough, cough, if you need a sign-in, cough, cough. Just promise not to buy anything on my account. It was awesome.
It was.
It was awesome. I read The Boys comic for a long time. I didn't read all of it. I kind of fizzled out after a good, healthy amount of issues. I did. What did last, 86 or 75?
I don't know. I've never read The Boys.
Yeah, so I made it, I'm going to say, issue 40, 45-ish, somewhere around there. So I read a lot. And the series just, it was just awesome.
Was it, true to the comic?
Very, 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 it's probably closer than anything else that's been out there. Hmm. Within reason. Like, I thought the Watchmen movie was really close, mm-hmm. except for the changing of the MacGuffin at the end.
Yeah.
Which made more sense in the movie than strange octo-vagina monster that was in Alan Moore's book. And even Alan Moore said it. I mean, the crazy sea creature devouring New York was just a throwaway idea. It could have been anything. Mm-hmm. I much rather preferred the movie's version of that. But it was really good. It was just good. It was just good. That's all I can say. It was just good. It was good entertainment.
I had no idea what to expect because I didn't read any of it. And I was happy to see Simon Pegg.
Yeah, that was awesome.
In the series.
Yeah.
And not awesome. Just the cameo either. He was part of the series.
Because the lead character, Huey, in the comic was actually, I'm trying to remember who drew it, Derek Robertson? Guy who did Hitman, I think?
Possibly. I don't know.
I feel like he was the artist. Somebody's going to shoot me because I'm just totally botching names today, left, right, and center. But he based the look of the character on Simon Pegg.
Mm-hmm.
So Huey is Simon Pegg. Yeah. And then in the TV show, Simon Pegg plays Huey's dad, which is like, awesome. Yeah. That's a nice touch, guys. That's nice. That's nice for reaching out. And even better for Simon to go, yeah, let's do this. Although his American accent, oh, gosh. Oh. Oh, gee, Huey. I think you should stay here and watch television with me. Oh, it was bad. But it's just awesome. Like, anybody who doesn't understand The Boys, it's basically the Justice League, and they're super powerful, and they're run by a corporation, and it's all about marketing and Twitter likes and social media hits and advertising and you know. So the Wonder Woman anagram, she gets a contract that says, okay, you're going to go and fight this villain at this time. It's all been staged. It's ready. Kind of like wrestling, you know, where it's all staged.
Wrestling's real.
Wrestling's real. You know, and they're D-bags. They're douchebags. They're not nice people. They're ego inflated, and they think, which could happen. Like, I mean, either you become Superman and you become this perfect Boy Scout who is like all amazing, or you become the Homelander, which is the name of the Superman anagram in The Boys, and you become this, you know, goofball that thinks that you're above everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So it was great. It was great. Now there is, it was a very graphic comic book.
Oh, yeah.
It was a very graphic comic book. So some of the scenes were tamed down quite heavily.
That was tamed down?
That was tamed down. Like it was, there's some scenes.
Not reading the book, there were some shocking scenes for sure.
Oh, the comic's worse.
Like
there was a reason why DC Comics stopped publishing it, and it had to be picked up by Dynamite.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, just like the Batawang. They went one step too far.
Well, the opening...
One step?
Yeah.
They probably went 10 steps too far for a regular DC publishing.
It was the Felchin cover.
Yes.
It was the hamster and duct tape on the cover.
I feel like that was probably just the icing on the cake, though.
That was the icing on the cake. That was the trigger. Some exec at Warner Brothers was walking down the hallway and saw this cover and went, "What are you people doing down here in the bottom floor of this building?"
So the series, which is seven or eight episodes... would cover how many comics, you think?
Oh, gosh. I'm not sure. I'd have to think about it.
Because
it was a while since I read it.
Yeah, I mean, there's still lots of story left.
But, spoilers, the ending to the series is a little bit different than what happened in the book.
Okay.
So, second season is going to be like Walking Dead. It's just going to take a skip to the right. Like, there's no way they can follow the comic book with that ending the way they have it. You know, they might be able to use it as touchstones, right?
Yeah.
Little plot points, but it can't follow the same story. Like, they just radically changed the ending to the series. That did not happen in the comics. So, we'll see.
I want to ask you what you're referring to, but I don't want to spoil it, so.
Okay, spoilers. 3, 2, 1, turn off your radio. 4, she's dead in the book.
Okay.
She's dead in the book. Yeah, okay. Dead. Dead, dead, dead. Not so alive.
Did she die the way they showed her dying? Oh, okay. Yeah. Or maybe that, maybe like, the wife like, isn't the wife.
What's his name? Carl Urban's character.
Yeah.
He's, you know, he's PO'd the whole time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's an angry man.
He's an angry man, and he wants to kill Homelander. He wants to take him down. He's angry the whole time.
Yeah. Well, I think Huey has a good reason to be angry, too.
That was awesome.
That's like the opening scene.
Yeah, the opening scene. Seriously, Dan.
I've read the first trade from the boys, so I know of the story.
I'll write down my Amazon account number for you.
Why don't you just say it out on the radio then?
Yeah, exactly. No, that's not going to happen. As it is, I think a couple of people have it that shouldn't.
Time to change your password.
Yeah, time to change the password. But no, it's just fantastic. I mean, it's just everything that you expect. It's kind of like Titans, you know?
Yeah.
Huge new Titans fan from Marv Wolfman days and George Perez and stuff like this. And then the Titans TV show comes out. It's very different from anything that's been published so far-ish. But it's still great. Like, I'm loving it.
Yeah, I mean, and then the season 2 trailer, they actually looked like the Titans. Like, whereas in the first one, they weren't a group, really. Like, an official group.
Yeah.
They were just kind of misfits going together. And
am I mistaken? Did I misinterpret the trailer? It kind of looks like there's going to be a second Titans team. So it's almost like, did I not see a Superboy type in a black T-shirt?
Yeah.
So it's almost like
there's an aqua
the Dick Grayson Titans. The Dick Grayson Titans versus the Tim Drake Titans.
No, I didn't.
And
get
I
that
feel
impression.
Like the Tim Drake Titans are being introduced into this as a secondary team. Like, I feel like somebody said something about, well, what are we now, the new Teen Titans or something like this, or they kind of use that term.
Well, they implied that they were the Titans before.
Yeah.
Right. And now they're becoming the Titans again.
Yeah.
A team. No, they're not sidekicks or a team.
Yeah. So we'll see how that goes. Yeah, because that could also just refer to their sidekick adventures versus their current adventures. Anyways, I'm excited to see it.
Yeah.
I can't wait. I mean, it's good stuff. Yeah. Batwoman, we're all waiting for Batwoman, right? Yeah, everybody's got their Batwoman tattoo. Everybody saw that trailer?
No.
No, there's a trailer and the guy's in the tattoo parlor and he says to this girl, "Oh, what do you want? Like a butterfly or a tramp stamp or what would you like? What can I draw you?" And she hands him a piece of paper. He goes, "Oh gosh, tattoos." Some other person comes in with the same piece of paper. Another person comes in. And then Batwoman, not in costume, comes in. She goes, "Busy night?" And the tattoo artist says, "Yeah, but everybody wants the same thing." And then he shows off the Batgirl silhouette symbol. The Batwoman symbol, right?
Yeah.
And everybody's like, you know, "Oh, I've got it on my neck. Oh, I've got it on my ankle. I've got it on my bicep." And she walks out. She goes, "Imagine that," or something. Whatever she says as she walks out. And then the tattoo artist pulls down his shirt, and he's got it across his chest. And
that sounds even worse than the first trailer.
It was a bad trailer. It was a bad trailer.
That's cringeworthy and embarrassing.
It is a bad trailer. That's why I'm like, is everybody ready for this show, or we think it's going to be a cluster nuts?
I think it's going to be okay, but
I think it's going to be horrible because haven't seen that second trailer, but watching the first trailer, like, the actress playing Batwoman just doesn't seem to have any charisma or anything. Like, when I watch her, it's like watching paint dry.
Well, I've seen her in the prison. Was it purple is the no pink is the new black?
Orange is the
orange
new black.
Is the new black, right? Orange prison jumpsuits. I get it. I get it now.
Martin finally understands.
Yeah. But she was in that. But realistically, her entire acting ability is I mean, she's a beautiful lady, but her entire acting ability is to sit there and look at you coyly, you know, and have that snarky kind of, you know, "Oh man,
lick you from head to toe like a postage stamp. Ticky, ticky, bow, wow. You know, that, so I don't know. Can she carry a series? Find out.
But just Crisis is looking pretty good, though.
Crisis. Oh, my goodness. So much interesting stuff going on there.
Yeah. Yeah. And she's part of that. So
yeah, well, she'll be part of it.
But she'll be buried in all everyone else.
Yeah.
What's his name?
I still think that, again, if anybody doesn't know, the Berlanti universe, the CW shows, Arrow, Flash, Legends of Tomorrow and stuff, they have a crossover every so often. Yeah. And the next crossover is a Crisis on Infinite Earths crossover. And they're saying that they're going to have, what's his name? Kevin Conroy, who's done the voice of Batman in animation for decades. He's coming back as an old Bruce Wayne in the Batman Beyond universe, which is amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, to hear that voice on TV as Bruce Wayne, and Black Lightning's going to be in it, and all the other characters. And then there's some rumors that other people like...
Tom Welling.
There's rumor about Tom Welling. Not him. I'm thinking Brandon Routh confirmed he's going to be in it as Superman.
And the Atom is his regular
character. And the Atom, and and all these other characters. And somebody was saying, well, there's going to be Linda Carter's going to be there as Wonder Woman, and some other stuff that they're going to pull in from really, really old shows and stuff, and Michael Keaton, Batman stuff. I think the really older stuff might be video clips. Like, in my head, I see Flash running through the timeline, and as he's running through the timeline, these images are flashing through the Speed Force cloud. And I feel like there'll be clips from the old TV shows and the old movies.
Apparently.
So you'll get flashes of like Wonder Woman as Linda Carter as Wonder Woman and stuff. But I don't think 80-year-old or 70-year-old or 90-year-old Linda Carter is going to be dressed up as Wonder Woman in the TV show. I just don't see that happening.
Apparently, Brandon Routh's Superman is from Kingdom Come.
Well, that's the rumor, right? Because when he opened up his shirt at San Diego Comic-Con, he was wearing the... But who knows? Maybe he's just going to be Adam and Tom Welling's going to be Superman. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah.
But it should be fun. It should be just a fun crossover with a shite ton of cameos and stuff.
Because, what's his name? Robin. The original Batman series. Is he still alive?
Oh, Burt Ward.
Burt Ward, he's on there. They've hired him for something, too.
Yeah, so he's going to make a cameo and stuff like this. And again, what's he going to do? I mean, I can't see 80-year-old Burt Ward dressed up in a Robin costume.
We can hope, right? Like, we can hope.
Yeah, like, what's he going to be doing? Sitting in the Batcave with
Bat suppositories.
Exactly. So, but I still think clips from the other show. Who knows? I feel like we're running out of time here, though.
We're definitely out of time.
So, should we head out?
Yeah.
We're done? All right. Catch us every week on, well, not necessarily every week because it was 2 weeks last time. I was lazy. Stitcher, iTunes, Apple, Google Play, some other service.
You have been listening to the Hey Kids Comics Radio Show broadcast through the facilities of Trent Radio on 92.7 CFFF FM in Peterborough, Ontario, and available as a downloadable podcast at www.heykidscomics.ca and at www.firstcomicsnews.com. Promotional consideration for the show was provided by no one. Are you kidding me? We couldn't get advertisers if we tried. Wardrobe for our hosts was provided by Joe Nerds in Whitby, Ontario. They don't know that fact, but that is where we get 90% of our clothes from. No animals were harmed in the making of this radio show. Marty tried, but allergies won't let him get too close to Sam's cats. The views and opinions expressed by Sam are solely his own and do not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the rest of the hosts, as we all like The Walking Dead TV show. The Hey Kids Comics Radio Show is a Quinn Martin production and copyright Hey Kids Comico. Rebroadcasting in part or in whole of this show is forbidden, but really, who would want to anyway?